This podcast is part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Welcome to the Wizarding World Lorecast. Join us as we take a deep dive into the lore of the fantastical world of the Harry Potter universe. Welcome back, witches and wizards, to another episode of the Wizarding World Lorecast. I am one of your hosts, Ben of Temeria, followed by my good friend here, Nina.
Hey!
So, this week we are going still with our locations in Diagon Alley, Hogsmeade. We did a lot of locations in Hogsmeade, but today, last week we did Diagon Alley. So
yes.
Why not today we go over one very specific place in Diagon Alley? The Gringotts Wizarding Bank, where everybody gets their money.
Where all their stuff is safely stored.
Yes. Well, supposed to be safely stored anyway.
Yeah. Mostly safely stored.
Which we'll get into. So... Mm-hmm. To get right into things here, so Gringotts Wizarding Bank was located on the north side of Diagon Alley. It was the side closest to the Leaky Cauldron and thus closest to Charing Cross Road in Muggle London. The bank was located near Poultage Colden's Cauldron Shop, Florsham Blots, and the Florian Fortescue's Ice Cream Parlor.
Mm-hmm.
Which I am super excited to try the ice cream at the Florence's ice cream parlor, and I'm very curious if it's pretty close to Gringotts when I go to Wizarding World this year.
Yeah, I wonder if the setup will be similar.
I'd imagine it would be. I wouldn't see it not being similar since they built the entire park specifically designed with Diagon Alley in mind as the expansion.
Right.
So
it'd be kind of weird for it to be like at the very beginning of Diagon Alley.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I do know that Gringotts is in, like, towards the end of Diagon Alley as a park, because one, you can enter it and exchange your Muggle money for Wizarding money. Now, the Wizarding money, sadly, is not galleons. It's like weird bank certificates. And it's kind of
like a traveler's check?
Yeah, it's really weird. It's like, yeah, it's $20. It's like, can it be like freaking Disney? Like, I go to Galaxy's Edge and I buy a literal metal gift card. The metal gift card is in the shape of a spire, or a spira, which is the currency they use on Batuu at Galaxy's Edge, where the park is located on. So you have the actual money, and it's just like a scannable gift card, and you can reload it whenever you want. Which
that
is really cool.
Why
Universal just didn't, like, hey, we have galleons and you can just scan the back of the galleon or something like that. Like, that would be really cool to do. Or, like, have all three different various of currency. But
even if it was, like, a round gift card and you just scanned it, like, with a QR code or something.
Right.
That would be really cool.
But, no, here's a bank check. It's like, what? It's a bank certificate. It's super weird. But, anyway, to get right into it, with the history, the bank was created by the goblin Gringott in 1474. So the bank itself was goblin created. The creation of Gringotts was considered to be linked to the 14th century wizarding economic bubble, which happened in the century before. It was established not long after the soap blizzard of 1378, a vital event which burst the economic bubble. Okay. Before I go anywhere,
please,
I need to know the soap blizzard.
Yep,
so the soap blizzard of 1378 was presumably a blizzard of soap that occurred sometime in 1378. The blizzard was followed by a burst of 14th century economic bubble. The Gringotts Wizarding Bank was established long after. So going to the 14th century bubble. 14th century wizarding comic bubble was named and given to the economic bubble which affected the wizarding world's economy in the 14th century. Interesting. So they had a blizzard literally made of soap. Something did with the economy, and then they had a an economic bubble that burst because of this. God, that is so weird to say.
A whole bunch of soap suds just going down the alley, down the road.
That is insane.
It's like putting too much bubble bath in your bathtub, or putting too much wrong laundry soap in your washer. Right.
Too much detergent. Too much.
Too much.
So the bank, in the hands of the Ministry of Magic, shortly thereafter, beginning under some degree of wizard management already by the 1500s, when Tertius applied for the job of curse breaker, the two wizards who were discussing job vacancies at the door at Gringotts. In 1865, the Ministry decided to pull full control of Gringotts back in goblin hands.
Smart.
Yeah, you don't want another uprising.
No, absolutely not.
And shortly after open, Percival Rackham and Charles Rockwood commissioned Vault 12, which they protected with ancient magic. They left behind a path, including a key, which served as a portkey, which only those with the ability to detect ancient magic could follow. It was not opened for hundreds of years. In 1890, the key was discovered by Eleazar Figg and his student, which was led to an unidentified ruins where the student unlocked a private entrance to Gringotts. The goblin on the front desk was surprised and took them to the Vault 12 with instructions to lock them inside. Through exploration, the student found a pensive inside it. And obviously, mm-hmm. This is the events of Hogwarts Legacy. This is literally the get-go of the game. This is where you start. Which, honestly, that's what I really love about Hogwarts Legacy, is you start a new game, it's just so, like, the intro is, like, when I first booted it up and started playing, I was jaw-dropped the entire time playing through this.
And it was so good.
I was just jaw-dropped in the first cutscene that was going on, like, what happens in your carriage. I'm not going to spoil too much with, you know,
no, if I just no one's played the Hogwarts. The intro again over the other weekend, because my son and his friend were playing it, and they never touched before, so they started. So I'm just like, I gotta watch this beginning because it's just so wild.
It's so good.
It's so good.
The beginning is such. Oh, thank you, Avalanche, for creating such a wonderful game.
Was not expecting the beginning.
Please work hard at making the sequel.
Oh, I'm so excited. I hope so.
I want that so bad. So we do have Ranrock discover that they had to open the vault and entered it. He killed the goblin, which led them in and demanded answers from Eleazar and his student. They engaged in a duel, which destroyed the pensive and transformed it into a giant knight, which protected them. In the process, Eleazar and the student escaped the vault and Gringotts. Mm-hmm. And by escaping the vault, you go through essentially a portal, and boom, you're literally like right outside this train station going to Hogwarts.
Yeah, it was strange that it led right to the grounds, essentially.
I mean, I'm not surprised because the people, like, because of Percival Rackham and Charles Rookwood were professors at Hogwarts, so.
That's true.
Makes sense to me.
Right, okay, when you put it that way.
And then on November 26, 1926, Gringotts was put into lockdown with protective enchantments cast.
Mm-hmm.
That's really it. And then during Voldemort's control of the Ministry of 97 and 98, the bank was used yet again under the Ministry, which placed their own people in charge of the security at the institution. Yep.
And they didn't do a very good job about it either.
Oh, God, no, they did not. They did not do a good job whatsoever.
Nope, we'll find out about that.
Yeah, speaking of things not going well, we are now diving into the break-ins at Gringotts. Was surprising, there's quite a few. So on September 1st, 1890, Eleazar Figg and his student enter the mysterious Vault 12 at Gringotts, where they pass a trial set by the keepers and gain access to the memories of Percival Rackham. As they came to terms with the power of ancient magic, Ranrock was assisted into Gringotts by a Gringotts guard loyal to him. Both Ranrock and his supporter aim to find the truth behind the ancient magic to weaponize it for themselves. A key caused behind Ranrock's goblin rebellion. Mm-hmm. Ranrock murdered the goblin banker who protested his entry, but were both fought off by a pensive guardian.
I was really quite sad about that death.
Yeah, like he didn't do anything wrong whatsoever. And he was probably, he was one of the, like the only goblin I actually liked.
Yeah.
He was nice. Yeah, well, I mean, there's some other there's other goblins in Hogwarts Legacy I actually do like because they're not
stereotypical goblin.
Well, I wouldn't say stereotypical. No? I would say the goblins that we are familiar with from Harry's time. Mm-hmm. Because during his time, the goblins aren't nice. Or the goblins we meet, at least, aren't nice.
Yeah. Well, they also work at a bank where they're guarding all their money, so imagine that they would just
that's a fair point.
It would be nice in general.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So now we go to the 1990-1991 break-in, which deals with Hogwarts Mystery. So this is your character in Hogwarts Mystery. So during the 1990-91 school year, a dark wizard wearing a cap attempted to break into the vault of Sir Eldrick Parpadum. Alistair Moody sent 7th year students Minerva Stein and Jacob Sibling and Nymphadora Tonks to investigate the crime scene to take witness statements from the present. At the part of the Aura Work experience, Griphook refused to divulge what was in the vault, citing a client confidentiality. Thank you. Confidentiality. God, words. I need to get better with words because I just do.
I think it's the ending of that word. Confidentiality.
Confidentiality. Yeah. It's the ending. I hate that. The thief was revealed to be Edrin Burke, a former healer of San Mungo's and agent of R, who wished to steal Chinese fireball claws from there for a special potion for R, with Jacob Sibling reporting back with the news back to Gringotts once he had been apprehended. Mm. And so this is in your 7th year. So your 7th year during Hogwarts Mystery, you as your character can participate in like work studies, essentially. You go and work jobs by the ministry to get like experience and stuff like that, which is really cool because the beyond Hogwarts, because you do go beyond set your 7th year and you play beyond being at Hogwarts, you get to choose and like do jobs like for the ministry. So you could be an Auror if you wanted to, which is really
the work
cool.
experience kind of gives you credit in that aspect.
I think, I don't know how the gameplay mechanic works with that. I haven't played the I'm still in year 5, so I haven't really gotten that far. And I haven't booted that game up in a good while. So now we move to another break-in in 1991. So the break-in in 1991 was committed by Cornus Quell, who was attempting to steal an object in Vault 713. The vault, one of the higher security ones, held a small grubbly bag. Inside the vault was the Philosopher's Stone. Albus Dumbledore sent Rubius Hagrid to retrieve it, and while the latter was escorting Harry Potter to Diagon Alley in order to buy his school supplies, later that very same day, after Hagrid and Harry left the alley, someone, apparently a very powerful wizard, broke into the vault. Although he was unsuccessful obtaining the Philosopher's Stone, the break-in shocked the wizarding world because it was practically unheard of for Gringotts to be robbed, and the culprit was not caught. Though it was later learned Cornus Quell broke into the vault acting under orders from Lord Voldemort. Or, you know, you can say Lord Voldemort went into the vault because he was kind of like in his body.
A part of...
Yeah, it's like his other half of his head.
So, would you say that Quirrell was a powerful wizard on his own, but only powerful
he
was part of Voldemort?
Oh, he was only powerful because of Voldemort. He was not. I can't see Quirrell being a powerful wizard on his own.
He was a professor, though.
He was a professor, yeah, but freaking good old Lockhart was a professor.
No. That doesn't count because he kind of like, I swear he con-manned his way in there and it was.
No, he didn't con his way in there because Dumbledore had no other choices. That's literally the only reason. The only reason Godfrey Lockhart was a professor at Hogwarts is because Dumbledore literally had no other options to have someone in that freaking job.
That's fair. I would think that Voldemort would be a more powerful wizard than Quirrell, but I don't know. I still feel like Quirrell would have at least a ledge to stand on.
He might have some. We'll never
Since he did. Yeah, we'll never know. But he did defeat Defense Against the Dark Arts, so that's the only reason why I'm saying you have to have some sort of good
that's
magical power behind you.
I guess. That's fair.
Yeah.
But, you know, and who knows? Who knows?
Who knows? Yes.
We will never know. Unless they do something more before that time with Hogwarts Mystery or something like that. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So now we get to the 1998 break-in, which the break-in of 1988 was committed by Harry Potter, Hermione Granger, and Juan Weasley. Harry, Ron, and Hermione were aided by a reluctant Griphook in exchange for Godric Gryffindor's sword. They broke into the vault of Bellatrix Lestrange, where the Lord of Voldemort's Horcruxes, Hoka Huffpuff's cup, was hidden. They came to the conclusion that the break-in was necessary after Harry deduced the location of the Horcrux after the skirmish at Malfoy Manor. At the door of the bank, two human guards had probity probes. Word. Say that five times fast. Tongue twisters suck, I will say that. I've been doing tongue twisters a lot with voiceover work, and it's not fun. It's hard. Devices that detected concealment charms. Harry quickly used a confundus charm on the two guards, and Hermione passed them unchecked. Once inside the bank, they were in danger of being found out, and Harry used the Imperius curse on a goblin and a Death Eater named Travers in order for them to continue onward. And yes, you did hear that right. Harry used the Imperius curse. That's like... That and the Cruciatus Curse are the only two unforgivables he's ever done. He's only done the Cruciatus Curse against Bellatrix in his fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done the Imperius Curse. This is the only time he does the Imperius Curse is during this break-in.
Yeah.
If I recall.
So I actually just rewatched Deathly Hallows yesterday and like the day before, and it's funny how they show it, because they show it as like a puff of puff something of sweet smelling that they breathe in, they inhale, and it's like,
so in the movie they don't, he doesn't say Imperio or anything, he doesn't say anything, so because the movie wise they want Harry to be the good guy, they don't want him using the evil spells.
No,
that's why.
Right.
Books on the other hand, they don't care.
No.
Books will go dark, but they don't care about the audience, because a lot of the audience for movie wise were kids and young adults. That's why.
Right. Yeah. If you're reading the books, you kind of have an understanding of a lot more anyway.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
But if you only watch the films, it's kind of like, yeah, we're going to not have him say Imperio or anything. So people can still be, hey, he's still the good guy. He hasn't done anything bad. Though he does say Crucio in year 5. You do hear that in the film straight off the bat.
Oh.
You do hear him say
Yes,
Crucio.
You do. Okay, now I remember that. Mm-hmm.
But regardless, you don't hear him say Imperio, which is, it's like, okay. And the way we see it in the film, him saying Crucio is out of, like, anger. So it makes sense that way.
Yeah, now for him to use it as a tactical means.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, however, when they went to Bellatrix Vault, they were which was stocked with all manners of treasure. They found out the treasure had the Gemio and the Flagrante charms placed on it, which meant that thieves would be burned by the object, which had duplicated, until the thief was crushed under the burning weight of fake treasure.
Mm-hmm.
So the Gemio charm, like, once you touch it, it replicates constantly. And then the Flagrante charm is, once you touch it, it will burn you.
Mm-hmm.
What is sucks and is actually a really good trap.
Yeah, it was brilliant, actually.
Too bad they got through it.
Too bad.
So the trio still managed to escape with the Horcrux by fleeing on a half-blind dragon that was part of the security for the vault, leaving parts of the bank in ruins. Upon learning of this, Voldemort slaughtered a large number of bank guards and clerks, including Griphook, effectively venting out his rage and eliminating witnesses.
Yeah, because Griphook said, nope, he only did part of the deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Luckily, the Sword of Gryffindor has a mind of its own and doesn't care about anything to do with anyone.
Ownership. Yep. And it dipped out.
And now we actually have some break-ins after the Battle of Hogwarts. So following the defeat of Lord Voldemort at the Battle of Hogwarts and Kingsley Shacklebolt becoming the acting Minister of Magic, the bank was presumably put back into goblin management. After the recent security breach and escape of one of their dragons, however, Gringotts was quick to recondition those security measures. By July 31st, the same year, they had replaced the dragons and security trolls that had previously guarded its high security vaults with sphinxes.
Oh.
And sphinxes are, in the wizarding world, are pretty dangerous creatures, regardless still. But you do have to, if I recall, I think they are just like in mythology, where you have to answer riddles, if I'm not mistaken.
That would make sense. I don't know just if that's like better or worse than keeping dragons.
Well, typically they won't attack unless you get something wrong.
Right. You think that they have, like, goblins that are specifically trained in answering riddles to get past the Sphinx afterwards?
I mean, there's probably, hey, what's it? Like, they'll probably rotate riddles and make sure the staff knows what they are.
Oh, work in tandem, you think?
Probably.
Hmm, okay.
That's what I would think they would do.
Mm-hmm.
So the goblins did not notify their clients about the changes in security measures. However, as one of them, Mallory Twiddle, would later send a letter to the Daily Prophet complaining about how he had surprised by the change and ultimately unable to access his vault because of the difficult riddles asked by the Sphinxes guarding it, in which they went back to the old arrangement. Okay, so yeah, they do riddles, and apparently they are actual difficult ones that the Sphinxes apparently make up.
Good.
And then February 8th, 1999, Gringotts had gone back to using dragons as the bank announced that there was now opening as a dragon feeder at Gringotts through an advertisement in the Daily Prophet on said date.
That bothers me.
Right? I don't know how I feel about that. It bothers
me so much. I don't like that.
No, I don't know if I like that at all. Jeez.
Feeding the dragon.
So, Gringotts was an imposing snow-white multi-storied marble building located partway down Diagon Alley near its intersection with Nocturne Alley. They towered over the neighboring shops. It was the place where British witches and wizards store their money and other valuables in heavily guarded vaults miles below ground, which we do get to experience in Hogwarts Legacy in the game, Hogwarts Mystery, and the films.
Yes. That's really cool.
When Harry Potter first visited Gringotts, when he was told by Hagrid that one would have to be mad to try rob Gringotts, and that apart from Hogwarts School with Witchcraft and Wizardry, it was safest place for anything valuable to be kept. Goblins were extremely greedy and would protect their money and valuables at any cost, which made them ideal guardians for the valuables of the wizarding world. The goblins had a code that forbade them to speak of the bank's secrets and would consider it base treachery to break any part of that code.
Good. It's good morals to have when you're running a bank.
Exactly. The century-old bank was run by goblins. They alone knew the secrets of twisting underground passages and the enchantments and creatures in place to defend against intruders. There was a rumor that Cornelius Fudge was trying to take over Gringotts when he was a Minister of Magic. However, it was published in The Quibbler. It was likely unsustainable. Which, yeah, that makes sense. Good luck with that.
Yeah, I don't know what Fudge would do with what would he do with it?
Right. So now we go, and that's the description of the bank on the outside and all. So we have that main entrance and main hall. So from Diagon Alley, a set of white stairs led up to the set of burnished bronze doors. The doors were flanked by goblin in uniform in scarlet and gold. Though during the Second Wizarding War, the goblin was replaced instead by two wizard guards with probity probes. There was an entrance to Gringotts, and it led into a small entrance hall to another set of doors. Engraved on these silver doors were the words, "Enter, stranger, but take heed of what awaits the sin of greed. For those who take but do not earn must pay most dearly in their turn. So it seeks beneath our floors a treasure that was never yours. Thief, You have been warned. Beware of finding more than treasure there.
I like that.
Meaning, don't steal our stuff. Don't steal our stuff or you'll die.
Yeah. So you're gonna have a lot of surprises down there.
Yeah, which they're not gonna be fun. Some might bring fire. Through these doors, also flanked with goblins, was a vast marble hall-long counters, stretching along its length. The doors leading off to the vault passageways, with around 100 goblins sitting in them. The vaults extended the miles under the city and were accessible through the rough stone. Complex and interconnected passageways means the magic carts were operated by goblins. Dragons and other mysterious beasts lurks in the depths as additional security devices. And then private entrances to Hogwarts could be arranged. They were very uncommon. Those who had great wealth and or power were the only ones capable of arranging it. Hence, Percival, Rackham, and Rookwood were able to get it because they had a lot of power. And probably wealth, I'd imagine, during that time.
Oh, I would imagine so, yeah.
I forgot to put a mid-break section in here.
Oh, I think right now is a good place for a mid-break.
I think so, too. So let's get to that. All right, welcome to the middle of the show, where we're talking about everything with the podcast that has nothing to do with the lore of the Wizarding World. Here, we want to thank all of our listeners listening to us. Thank you so much. And if you want to support the show, there's a few options you can do. You can go to patreon.com/WizardingWorldLoreCast, or you can sign up there to get ad-free episodes, or even join us on the show once a month, talk about a topic of your choosing. You can leave us a 5-star review with some words on Apple, and we'll read that out the next time on the show, as well as a nice Spotify comment. We don't have any this week, but that's all right. And you can also find us on a few different Discord servers. You can find us on the Robots Radio Discord at robotsradio.net, as well as my own Discord, the Ben and Friends Podcasting Discord, which both links are provided below. You can go check those out, join us, talking about a bunch of random stuff on those Discords, or anything with the Wizarding World, or any of the other shows that I host, which are Holocron History, Star Wars Canon vs. Legends, the Final Fantasy Lorecast, and the Witcher Lorecast. I think that's all I have. Oh, and you can find us live every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on my Twitch channel at twitch.tv/BenOfTemeria.
Mm-hmm.
That's it?
This sounds about right. Yep. You covered all the bases. Yep.
Awesome. Well, with that being said, let's get back to more Gringotts.
All right.
All right. So we're back. Now, Gringotts. We are now diving into the vaults of Gringotts.
Mm-hmm.
So, in contrast to the grand marble of the entryway and main hall, the passageways to the vaults were stone and dimly lit with flaming torches. They sloped down to a track upon which the ranked little carts controlled by the goblins. These carts took visitors deep beneath the surface of the earth, though through a maze of twisting passages to the vaults. The carts went very quickly, which made Hagrid a little queasy and prevented its occupants from getting a good look at the surroundings, and seemed to run a vast, complex, interconnected series of tracks that allowed them to move in and between any vaults. And there's a lot of vaults, by the way.
Yeah.
The vaults
at least 713.
Yeah, at least. And the vaults themselves varied in size and security. The largest, most well-protected vaults belonged to the oldest and richest wizarding families and lay deepest beneath the surface. Those vaults closer to the surface seemed to be smaller and have fewer security precautions surrounding them. They used keys, for example, rather than requiring the touch of a goblin to gain access. The rules around who's allowed to access vaults seemed to change. Sometimes wizards were asked for identification or a key to be allowed access, yet both Molly Weasley and Bill Weasley were able to get gold from Harry's vault for him.
Which does seem kind of strange.
I would say that's kind of strange, but it's also where does the line where he doesn't have any guardians, essentially, at this point? I mean, the Dursleys are technically his guardians, but they don't come to the wizarding world or ever mm-hmm. would be. So who would be, I mean, the Weasley family would be his guardians when it comes to the wizarding world.
Because he's a minor, so that would be why they'd have access, you think?
That's what I would assume anyway. Mm-hmm. Because since okay. he's a minor, I mean, he can go into his vault if he had his key with him, but a lot of times when he goes to Hogwarts, it's like he needs to get his stuff and like leave within a week. Or a little,
right.
or more, depending on what's going on.
True. True.
So, just depends. So, it is possible there is a charm forcing the wizard to give the gold to his rightful owner. However, this wouldn't explain how Sirius Black was able to order a fireball in Harry's name, but would take gold from his own vault. Despite being an escaped convict at the time, it was also seen that only blood relations could inherit Edgar and God's vault. Albus Dumbledore implied strongly that when Sirius died, the last of the Black's family line, his vault was cleaned out and the contents added to Harry's, rather than Harry inheriting the vault as well. Though this could be an excuse due to Harry already having a vault, the bankers would not see fit to grant him an additional one. Which made sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed that any vault belonging to a criminal would remain guarded and untouched, as when all their estranged family were sentenced to Azkaban for life, their vault was not evicted, leaving it a safe place for Voldemort's Horcrux, though it is possible that they had non-criminal relatives who could have been in possession of the vault during their incarceration, but as Sirius Black was the last Black by name for at least some of his sentence, and his vault remained without anything being confiscated, it would seem that Gringotts operated outside of wizard law, at the very least, in rights of ownership towards their vaults and what is kept inside.
That's interesting. Yeah, I do wonder what their, like, rules and regulations would be concerning inheritance or who would be in charge of it.
Right. This is, which is funny, like, going over all this lore and stuff like that, you get to thinking, I was like, huh, how does that work? We never heard of this law before. We never heard about this. On Holocron, me and Austin would constantly complain because we've been going over different companies
mm-hmm.
in the Star Wars galaxy. And it's like, what are labor laws in the Star Wars galaxy like? We don't
know.
No. What are their pay? What do they get paid? We don't know. They don't. Someone tell us. Someone tell us these things.
We need answers.
Adults, we need answers for this. As adults, we need answers.
Were they okay? Struggling with the inflation and being able to pay rent and food?
Right.
Yeah.
So who knows? But next we are going into the security of Gringotts. So Gringotts use a variety of security systems. Most lower security vaults, such as Harry Potter's, require a key. Higher security vaults require the touch of a certain goblin or certified Gringotts goblin. Higher security vaults might have various enchantments upon the doors. For an example, the door to Vault 713 needed to be stroked by a certified Gringotts goblin, which caused it to melt away. If anyone but a Gringotts goblin touched the door, the person would be stuck in the wall, which had been checked for trapped thieves for about once per decade. This, and the fact that visitors must travel in the minecarts to access the vault, strongly suggests that there were anti-apparition charms around the bank.
That would make sense.
That makes sense for the apparition charms. That sucks for the security trap door. It's like, yeah, you put your hand on it and you try to enter it without not being yours and without being a certified goblin. You're going to be stuck there for at least a decade.
You're right. It would be.
You would be dead by then.
Oh, you would absolutely be dead, bud.
You'd be dead within like a couple of days, like a week.
Mm.
So yeah. At various points, the banks had used dragons, security trolls, and sphinxes to guard the highest security vaults, such as the vault of the Lestrange family. Though affiliated with Gringotts, the dragons kept there were not actually tamed in any traditional way, in the sense they were merely used to discourage intruders and unauthorized persons from approaching the vault in which these beasts were stationed at. They were conditioned in the inhumane way that compelled them to retreat whenever they heard the sound produced by clankers, which only the goblins possessed. Which is terrible.
Yeah, I just don't like that entire paragraph.
No, don't harm dragons. There was no dragons harmed during this film. Well, during this recording.
During this, yes, or ever this, in or this ever. Recording.
Yes, exactly. Dragons are great. I love dragons. Unless they try to kill you. That's a whole different story. So the usage of sphinxes were troublesome for some clients when they wished to make a withdrawal, but were unable to answer the riddles that the sphinxes gave them as security questions. Another security measure was the thief's downfall. Charmed a waterfall that the goblin cards must pass through. It canceled all enchantments and magical concealments and threw the carts off their tracks. Some vaults used the Gemino and Flagante curses. When any item was touched by a thief, it multiplied rapidly and burned them, eventually crushing and scorching them to death. Objects within Gringotts couldn't be summoned. At times, probity probes were used on clients to detect enchantments, magical concealments, and hidden magical objects.
Mm-hmm.
They don't mess around.
No. No, they really don't.
And then on his first visit to Gringotts, Harry was told by Hagrid to be cautious. Goblins were extremely greedy and would protect their money and valuables at any cost, which made them ideal guardians for valuables of the wizarding world. This became one of the primary reasons that Voldemort chose to hid one of the precious Horcruxes in the deeper vaults of the bank, and he had explosively furious when it failed his expectations. Mm-hmm. Ironically, Harry later did rob Gringotts with Hermione Granger and Ron Weasley, and the only known successful theft in history of the bank, by taking advantage of a former employee's knowledge of the inner workings of the bank. It is unknown if Harry was able to resume normal business with the bank following Voldemort's defeat.
Oh yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
I would imagine so, because it was an isolated incident, and only very few people knew it was Harry, Ron, and Hermione. And those people are dead.
You have a really good point there.
So
that's a good point. Yeah, he did go back and like kill everybody that was there that
day. So like the curator they took with him and took hostage with Imperius Curse, he literally got eaten by the dragon.
Yeah, the dragon took his revenge on him.
Grip Hook, who was an accomplice, was killed by Voldemort.
Mm-hmm.
And then any of the goblins that would have seen them were burnt alive by the dragon.
Or
killed by Voldemort. So there's no witnesses.
That's a good point, yeah.
There was no witnesses. So it says that we don't know, but I would imagine
deduced.
It was probably deduced that Harry was fine.
Yeah.
He was also the one who defeated Voldemort, so this is kind of like, it's fine. He gets a pass.
True, but if you're going to make that argument, would you really think the goblins would care?
Probably not.
I wouldn't think so. I don't think he could say that around them and be like, make a difference to anything.
Right. So during the second Wizarding World, security of the bank was further enforced, as it was taking normal clients around 5 hours to make withdrawals. Forbidden probes were a known security measure to use during this time, which could be struck up a certain part of their bodies. Only employees of the bank would be able to get money out of the vault for a client much faster, as Bill Weasley did for Harry Potter.
Mm. So that fan fiction that I keep telling you to listen to, but When Roses Bloom Again,
yeah.
There is a case that he deals with about robberies in Gringotts. Mm-hmm. Later on, I'll tell you what happens, but they successfully robbed so many vaults that he couldn't figure it out until he like reviewed footage. You'd be surprised when you hear how they got away with it. It was actually really good.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So next we dive into employment. So while Gringotts was largely staffed by goblins, including Griphook, Balrog, and Ragnok, it was Ragnok, I don't know, was actually employed by Gringotts.
Yeah.
He breaks into Gringotts and with a like an accomplice. It wouldn't be surprised that he was employed at Gringotts. I think he was employed by Gringotts at some point. I can't remember.
Maybe.
It was part of his story. It is known that the bank did employ humans. Gringotts actively advertised career employment to Hogwarts students, at least for curse breakers, and might likely also do so for other wizarding schools elsewhere. Bill Weasley worked as a curse breaker for Gringotts in Egypt, retrieving artifacts from ancient Egyptian tombs and pyramids after his graduation from Hogwarts. Which is really cool because all this comes from the books.
Yes.
And they actually tie Bill's story in Hogwarts Mystery to what he does later in his life. Because your character that you create in Hogwarts Mystery, you become a curse breaker because you have to go to these curse vaults, you have to solve them, and learn what happened to your brother, and that's your whole point of going through the story. And Bill helps you out, becoming a curse breaker with you, and that's mm-hmm. what he does later in life, is he stays as a curse breaker, which is really cool.
That is awesome that they kind of foreshadow that.
And then when Bill wanted to work for the Order of the Phoenix, he transferred to the desk job in England to be near home. The same year, Fleur Delacour took a job at Gringotts as well after participating in the Tri Wizard Tournament to improve her English. Though she only worked part-time, they also employed dragon feeders, a job with a high mortality rate at 7 galleons per week. Oh, but 7 galleons.
I wonder.
It's a lot of money, but a high mortality rate. Good luck.
Yeah.
And at least during Harry Potter's break-in at the bank, there seemed to be full-time security force that comprised of wizard guards who rushed in the scene when their strange vault was broken into. Despite this, Grip Hook mentioned that at the time, the goblins resented wandbearers' interference in their internal affairs.
Yeah. They don't want the witches and wizards getting into their goblin stuff.
Right. And then now we have a competition, which is literally what it sounds like. Gringotts has a competition, so believe it or not. I did not know this until doing this research. Gringotts had no known competition in the wizard and banking industry, or competition as in like other banks. That's what I meant. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking outside the box. And there was almost surely a monopoly in Britain. Rubius Hagrid said it was the only wizard bank, but it isn't clear if it meant in Britain or the wizarding world as a whole. It is known, however, that the bank at least had dealings in Egypt, where Bill Weasley worked as a curse breaker as of 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And then given that the bank was the only wizarding bank in Great Britain, it stands the reason that the goblins would have a tremendous amount of power over the wizarding economy, as goblins were also the force behind minting the British wizarding currency, galleons, sickles, and nuts. If they were active around the world, they might be true for other nations as well. But we don't know. We don't know what the other nations are like during. Now, we do know there's probably other wizarding banks around the world because the U.S. will have a U.S. bank for the wizarding
right,
world.
Right, but couldn't you just argue that they'd be different branches of Gringotts? Much like...
Yeah, that's what I would
even
imagine.
Major... Yeah.
I mean, Gringotts would be the only bank, but hey, here's different branches across the world. That's
right.
More than likely.
That probably would be my guess.
And then it is likely, therefore, as goblins tend to be odds with wizards on political and social levels, that the ministry had laws to set in place to stop Gringotts and intentionally regulating the wizard economy, likely through the Goblin Liaison Office.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Trey, the best part about learning a story is getting to learn the origin stories. All those little nods and hints are like treats to make being deep in the fandom worth it. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, we have behind the scenes. I was going to go with an etymology, but it was going to get in like really like gray area stuff, and I didn't want to do that.
Oh, okay. That's probably smart.
Yeah. Yep. So, behind the scenes, in the film adaptation of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, the interior of the Australian House in London was used for Gringotts' grand entrance. For the second part of the film adaptation of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, a set was built in Leveston, as the scenes involving the dragon would have been impossible to film on location. The set was based on, but not an exact replica of the Australia House interior. Differs include the patterns on the marble floor and design of the chandeliers in the studio set as windows.
The chandelier is massive, though, in that set.
Oh, absolutely.
And beautiful.
I will say this is a little where controversy comes in, because a lot of people say, oh, that's like the Star of David on the floor. People see in like one scene in Sorcerer's Stone and Philosopher's Stone. It's like, no, that's they filmed it in Australia.
Okay.
It's in Australia, people. It's nowhere near England or anything like that. It's just that they had designs, weird, some star-based designs, and it's not even like a six-pointed star, I don't think. I can't remember.
Mm.
I don't know, I just remember I have a coworker going up in arms about it, and it's like, it's just like one scene.
Yeah, really? Calm down.
Yeah. So, the Marvel title... Tile on the floor was created using centuries-old process employment of making covers and hand-painted books. Different colored oil paints and poured over the surface for a large tray filled with water. The paint floats and swirled around with a stick. When paper sheets are placed on the surface, they pick up swirls of oil and paint. Lifted and turned over, they look exactly like veined marble. The illusion is made completely with brushwork and adds a further layer of textural detail to produce a convincing replica of a marble floor. This process was also used to create the marble floor of the courtroom at the headquarters of the Ministry of Magic.
People are so creative. It just blows my mind.
It's
I love
what
it.
You can do. I mean, look at Star Wars. Star Wars is literally was made in the late 70s and early 80s. And they use just random stuff.
Yes, practical effects will always be better anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And then Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, The Escape on the Dragon, clearly shows Whitehall across the Thames, placing Gringotts and therefore Diagon Alley itself around Southwark, which is in England, which I don't know geography with England, sorry. And then according to the film adaptation of the series, Harry Potter's vault is number 687, which is weird to me because Harry's family lineage is... old lineage, which I'm surprised he has a newer vault,
unless
it's specifically with the last name Potter, because he's a descendant.
I don't
of
know because if you consider it, if you're going to go down that route, like Flamel would have owned 713 for the Sorcerer's Stone, wouldn't you think?
If it's in Flamel's name, we don't know if it was in Flamel's name.
That was my headcanon. I don't know if that's
possibly
true either.
Who knows?
I don't know. I would just assume it had something to do with what we were talking about, like who would get the vault and if it would transfer. So maybe it just ended up transferring down the line too. Would be a possibility.
That's possible. So in the recent humorous Pottermore feature, the film adaptation of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Gringotts is referred to as where the cleaners have been on holiday since 1894. Wow. Okay. And then Death Eater Travers must have a vault in Gringotts as he was holding a key while entering the bank when he encountered Hermione Granger disguised as Bellatrix Lestrange before she, Harry, and Ron robbed the bank. And then Gringotts appears to serve the Wizarding World in some way. The U.S. Federal Reserve stabilizes the economy of the United States. It independently maintains the balance of the British wizarding economy, disallowing individual wizards, witches, or groups to manipulate national financial matters for personal gain. This would also explain part of the Goblin's resistance towards the wizarding domination over the operation of Gringotts during the Second Wizarding War, that the interference by the Death Eater-controlled Ministry of Magic threatened the very economic stability of the wizarding community they were charged with protecting. Evidence that this may be the case appears in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, where Bogrod is seen examining leprechaun gold in disguise. Leprechaun gold in disgust. Not only is such gold worthless, to allow it to continue to circulate would generate inflation, which in uncontrolled amounts can be dangerous. Fortunately, leprechaun gold disappears fairly quickly, minimizing the problem.
We know that's the case now.
Right.
Uncontrolled amounts can be dangerous of inflation.
Yeah.
So we're living now.
Inflation is terrible. Yes.
The worst.
So, according to Wombat Test, Gringotts may be the oldest building in Diagon Alley, and other shops grew around it, which is we kind of talked about last week.
Yeah, we kind of worked that one out.
If you look closely on the 422nd Quidditch World Cup program, you can see that Gringotts sponsors the 422nd Quidditch World Cup.
Nice.
Makes sense there. The poem that reads, at the entrance of the Gringotts, may have been inspired by the poem at the entrance of Hell in Dante's The Divine Comedy. Oh, God. That poem was based on Dante's Inferno? Okay, that's awesome.
That is really cool. I like that.
According to the article in the Quibbler, then Minister of Magic Cornelius Fudge wished to conquer Gringotts and had other goblins killed in luxurious ways, such as drowning them, dropping them in off buildings, poisoning them, and cooking them in pies, earning him the epithet Goblin Crusher. However, as the Quibbler is a tabloid magazine, this theory is debatable and most likely untrue.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine Fudge doing any of that, actually.
I mean, I could see some. it's Fudge. Let's be honest. It's Fudge. No one liked Fudge.
Nobody liked Fudge, no.
And then Harry believed that a primary reason Voldemort chose the banks, specifically the Strange Vault, to hide one of his Horcruxes is because as a child, Voldemort would have envied the wizarding families who possessed a vault in the prestigious bank that when he and an orphan whose magical maternal family had been reduced to poverty and therefore would not have a vault for him to inherit, did not. Something he would see as a sign of belonging to the wizarding world. He also believed the bank's famous security would be sufficient to protect the container of his soul fragment and the beyond the furious when he found out the goblins failed to guard the cup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then organized by Bloomsbury Publishing for the 2021 Harry Potter book night, when the cast of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child read aloud Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Chapter 5, Diagon Alley together, Christina Peters, the actress portraying Delphine in the Hamburg production of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, read the warning sign, "Enter, stranger, but take heed," from Gringotts Wizarding Bank.
Nice.
And that's it. And other than that, we do have you can visit Gringotts in Diagon Alley at the Wizarding World theme park at Universal Studios, Orlando. Well, I think only in Orlando, actually. Because I don't think they have the Diagon Alley version over at California, do they?
Oh, I am not sure, actually. That would make sense for it just to be in the one, but can't imagine they have two with a dragon on top of each one.
Let's find out. Universal Studio Diagon Alley. In Florida and California.
It might be really cool to have two of them.
It looks like it's just going to be Wizarding World of Harry Potter's theme area based on the Harry Potter series and at Universal Parks Resorts, Universal Studios Japan theme park in Osaka, Japan.
Oh.
Oh, no. Diagon Alley is only located in Florida.
Okay.
The California does not have Diagon Alley. Interesting.
Well, there can only be one.
Yep. That's why Florida's better.
Oop.
Yeah, Universal Orlando has the larger of the two Wizarding World of Harry Potter locations spread over the two theme parks. Hogsmeade is located in Isles of Adventure, and Diagon Alley is located in Universal Studio. Universal Orlando also have Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure, which the California version does not. Okay. So the Wizarding World of Harry Potter at Universal Studios Hollywood is patterned after Hogsmeade's side of Universal Orlando. This is California. There's only one park in California you can easily experience everything in one day. So yeah, Florida, if you want to experience the ultimate Harry Potter Wizarding World experience, go to Florida.
Yes.
Florida's bigger. The parks, Disney's better in Florida. Universal's better in Florida. Just go to Florida.
Just go there instead.
I will say the only thing that Disney had better over in California is the Marvel stuff. But it was actually just announced within the last week. Disney made a new deal with Universal NBC to where they connect the Disney's building a fifth park.
And it's really?
Just Marvel.
Oh.
Because before they couldn't have anything Marvel because of the contract they had with Universal, because Universal already had a Marvel park within Islands of Adventure. But everything in Islands of Adventure for Marvel was based on the 1990s.
Oh.
Everything is 19, like the Spider-Man ride is from the 1994 animated series. The Incredible Hulk roller coaster is from the 1993 Incredible Hulk animated show.
Oh my goodness.
Everything is based in the 90s. And like they never update anything because at that point they don't have rights. And the mm-hmm. only thing that really own the rights for is Hulk. That's the only thing they own the rights for anymore. And that's why Hulk will only be in team-up movies for Marvel. And She-Hulk is a separate character, and that's why they were able to do She-Hulk as a separate show.
I didn't know any of that.
Yep. So, yeah, Marvel's Disney's building a fifth park at Disney World, and it's going to be all Marvel stuff, which is going to be awesome. And right. Universal's building a third park, which is going to have a third Harry Potter park in it. So just go to Florida.
Just go to Florida if you want that stuff.
If you want to experience everything, go to Florida. Anyway, that's what I have from Green Gods this week. Do you have anything? Oh, the Quizzer World. What was our question?
The question last from last week was, when the Weasleys come to pick up Harry for the Quidditch World Cup in the Book of Goblet of Fire, they used a flu network. Now, why was that a problem?
It was because they used the flu network in the Dursley's house.
Yes, because the fireplace had been bricked up.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they bricked it up. Mm-hmm. That's right. They boarded
they bricked it up.
Because of the letters.
Because
of the letters from year one.
Yes, it's they bricked up. So they could not use the flu network to get into his house.
Mm-hmm.
To get him. Yeah, so that was the answer from last week. This week, we have a Magi zoology question.
Ooh.
Ooh, yep. So a unicorn is, of course, a white horse with a single horn in the middle of its head. But what color is a unicorn fowl?
Oh, the young.
The baby. Yep.
The baby.
So
most people don't know, like, mammal terms. A fowl is typically a baby, like a baby mm-hmm. horse. That's a fowl.
A baby, yes. So what color is the baby unicorn? That is the question that I have for this week.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Interesting. I'm trying to think. It's like, I don't think we learned that in the books, do we?
I don't believe so, no.
Oh, is this this is a Hogwarts Legacy question? Mm-hmm. What?
What?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. So there you go, people. Go play Hogwarts Legacy.
Yes. Also, spoiler, so if anybody wants to listen to that fan fiction, just we can end the episode here. But how that culprit was breaking into the vaults, they were a unregistered animagus, and they were able to turn into spiders. So they entered the vaults, took the money, and transported it outward, and just became a spider and hung out on the walls until the vaults were open, and they just scurried on out.
Oh, wow.
And they robbed like a whole bunch of vaults by doing this. And it just ended up being some bored noble girl that just was like, I have nothing better to do. And I thought it would be fun to rob the banks. That's how they did it, was they would walk on in, transform, and just wait it out as a
Interesting.
Spider.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. So. All
right.
But yeah, well, that's all I got.
That's awesome. Go respond to those questions in the Discord, Spotify, wherever. And yeah, thank you for listening to the Wizarding World Lorecast. And remember, mm-hmm. the wand chooses the witch or wizard. Thank you for listening to the Wizarding World Lorecast. You can find us on the Robots Radio Discord at robotsradio.net. You can find us on the Ben and Friends Podcasting Discord. You can also find us on Twitter at www.lorecast and even email us at wizardingworldlorecast@gmail.com.